Blog Talk Radio.
We'll get another action-packed edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show coming up. We have Neil Goliath Grove coming on at the 8:15 time slot there, which we don't use a lot, but it's kind of a last-minute put-together thing. He's going to be fighting in a month, coming up pretty shortly here. His record up here somewhere. He's actually fought some pretty big names. I'll have to ask him about this. He fought James McSweeney, who was a tough veteran. And I don't know if you got the chance to see it, but there's a really funny YouTube clip from the Ultimate Fighter show that James McSweeney was on where I forget who he was messing with, but they were trying to play a prank on some kid and they ended up having a fight in the house.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we talked about it on the show not long after it happened, but it was the UK edition, I think, and UK versus US. And McSweeney and this other guy just got into a huge fight in the house. And McSweeney is just a punk, you know, so he's gone down by TKO to Mr. Grove, and his only losses seem to be... when he goes past the first round, actually has one loss in the first round by heel hook submission, but actually two losses, I should say. But he's got a draw in the third round and a loss in the third round, so it's actually kind of 50-50. But the good thing is every single one of his wins are by knockout or TKO, so he's definitely a knockout artist. And he's lost two submissions losses, one to Mike Cisnolevitz and one to Cole Conrad in the Bellator Fighting Championships Heavyweight Tournament.
Excuse me, Mike Cisnolevitz from Lock Haven University, thank you.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I knew Mike.
Yep.
Mike, he came to Lock Haven, was a walk-on for the wrestling team and the boxing team. And he was training with both of us. I knew Mike. I helped work with him. And then they gave him a choice, and he took the wrestling team, you know. But, yeah, I knew Mike when he was, just a youngster in college.
Well, he's pretty good with the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu, I guess. He submitted Grove by heel hook at UFC 95. That was his last UFC fight, Neil Groves. That was in the first round at the 103 mark back in 2009. That was right after his win against James McSweeney. He's also got wins over the Colossus, James Thompson, famous for getting his zit on the ear pot.
Yeah, that's right. He had the ear thing with Kimbo.
Yeah, yeah. That's what he claimed to be. He's got a pretty even, almost 500 record now, Thompson. He's been kind of all over the world, literally. He's spent a lot of time in Japan recently. And speaking of a guy who spent a lot of time in Japan, we'll have to ask Neil about training with Jock Barnett, who's been all around the Japan doing wrestling and also MMA. So we'll have to chat with him about that when we get to it. But we have a lot of news to cover. We had a couple of deaths. One MMA fighter was killed, murdered execution style down there in the Mexican border. It's just pretty crazy. And I guess some of his buddies in the MMA world are blaming the MMA community for forcing him to forcing this guy to end up going down to Mexico. Sergio Salcido Moon and his friend Kevin Joel Romero were killed in cold blood while waiting to cross the border into California. And it was on the Mexico side of the bridge. And witnesses said a man approached their truck, lined up to cross into the U.S., and made several gun blasts and then left the scene. Moon was 25 and Romero was 28. And there were 5 9-millimeter shell casings around the truck. Salcido had 9 professional MMA fights and started out in Bakersfield, California, where he was fighting for the Gladiator Challenge promotion. A fellow fighter named Dominique Robinson said the sport had failed him, so that's why he moved from Bakersfield to San Diego. And he trained with Long Beach Fight Night and also he trained for Long Beach Fight Night and also Tachi Palace Fights. But then he ended up moving to Mexico, where he was promised a lot that would allow him to continue to fight and move up the ranks in MMA. So, and Robinson actually said, quote, MMA killed him. He should have never been there. Nobody helped him. He spells buddy, B-U-D-D-Y, nobody.
No.
I've never seen it written like that. That's kind of funny. He left his home in Bakersfield to San Diego and then to Mexico, where he should not have been, and he effing got killed. He would have never been there if people who had gave him a shot at anything, said Robinson. So that's a pretty crazy story there. Mexico is obviously a very dangerous place.
Yeah, I had a coworker of mine was going down there recently. I was like, I wouldn't even think about going there right now.
The other death, boxing lost a true legend of the sport, Gil Clancy.
Yeah, I got an email when we were in the middle of our interview, and I was going to interrupt and, mention it. Unfortunately, I was so busy at the time, you know, me being my professional self, on Career Builder, trying to get out of the hellhole of a job I'm in right now, that I forgot to mention Gil Clancy's passing. He was a true legend of the sport and a true gentleman. And I know sometimes I harp and, you know, beat on a dead horse. But you look at a guy like Gil Clancy, and what he was, I mean, he was, you know, everything about boxing, he was good. He was a good manager. He was a good trainer. I really liked him as, a fight analyst. He used to do some of the cards on CBS. When they would have the afternoon boxing cards. And I always really liked him on there because he had, you know, he never got crazy and he never, over-talked himself. He always just followed the action, and you could tell you were listening to a true professional and somebody that really knew the sport.
And I, you know, very much enjoyed listening to Gil Clancy. I remember when he was working with George Foreman, and he was working with Oscar De La Hoya for a brief period. He was a good guy. Boxing is going to miss him. 88 years old. You know, he lived a long, full life. And then it's like you think of like how classy he was, and then you just think about as I call them, the Beavis and Butthead of boxing, Roger and Floyd Senior Mayweather, that couldn't hold, you know, a candle in class or boxing expertise to this guy. And I look at, like, you know, some of the great trainers that, you know, we have, you know, lost recently, or some that, up there in age that really don't have an active involvement in the sport anymore. But you look at some, like, the really great gentlemen that the sport has produced over the years. You had guys like Ray Arcel, fine trainer, tremendous gentleman. Eddie Futch, who I consider one of the top gentlemen, one of the greatest trainers to ever, work a corner, one of quite a few guys out there. And he is the reason that Freddie Roach is doing so great today, because Eddie Futch installed not only, you know, a great knowledge of the sport of boxing, but compassion and class and integrity. And that's something that Beavis and Butthead, you know, just don't have. And they don't have class, they don't have boxing intelligence, they don't have integrity. You know, they're 0-3, they struck out, boom, take a seat. Then you have other guys, you know, that don't do much, know what the sport anymore. They're getting older, guys like Angelo and Dundee. Manuel Stewart's, you know, still training guys. Manuel Stewart, one of the greatest minds in boxing out there today. But here's another perfect example. And then I hate to, you know, get away from Bill Clancy because, you know, we were talking about him. Wonderful trainer out there, and he's pretty much not doing too much anymore. He was the guiding force behind the early years of Pernod Hopkins was Billy Fisher. Billy Fisher's in his, mid-70s now. And I remember about 5-6 years ago when they were having the, fight between Bernard Hopkins and Oscar De La Hoya. And they had both trainers on ESPN2, Friday Night Fights, a couple weeks before the fight, and they're talking about it. Billy Fisher, a very quiet gentleman, you know, very classy guy. Then you got Beavis over here, and he's calling him a bum and how he doesn't know nothing about boxing. And, yeah, who won that fight, by the way? Thank you. Yeah. But, I'm sorry. It's like I can't go a show without taking a shot at Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I'm sorry. I do want to, offer my condolences to the Clancy family. A very classy gentleman in boxing. Sure, we'll miss him.
Yeah, definitely. And, he's been around a while. I can remember, and I don't remember really watching much other than Tyson fights on HBO when I was really young, when I first got into boxing. But one thing I definitely remember in the 90s is watching George Foreman's comeback. I think the very first fight I watched of Foreman's comeback was when he fought Jerry Cooney in Gil Clancy,
yeah,
in Cooney's corner. So I remember him from that fight. That was a pretty quick one at the end of Cooney's career, really, and the start of Foreman's new career. And he made pretty quick work of him, but I think I still have that fight somewhere on tape, on VHS tape somewhere. It was a definitely a tough loss for the boxing community, and he will be missed.
Before we get our interview, I just got a few things that I just want to go through real quick. Tomorrow night, ESPN2, David Lemieux fighting, very impressive young fighter out of Canada. I would recommend anybody to get the chance to tune into that. After we're done our interview, I'll do more in-depth about the fight card on Saturday night, headlines between Eric Morales and Marcos Mendana, which I think is going to be more of a mismatch than anything. And then I just got the word that Danny Green, who had the big knockout over Roy Jones, and I thought he was having some health problems, but yeah, he was. He was having appendix and a large aspis, sort of a softball.
I thought it was going to end his career, but apparently not. He was going to be fighting another Jones conqueror in Antonio Tarver.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll have to cover this this past weekend's fight events. We had, of course, Strikeforce had their challenger show last Friday, and then we also have Hank Lundy's fight to talk about on last Friday nights.
Yeah.
So right now we got to get Neil Goliath Grove on the phone. He was asked us for a spot closer to 8. So a minute early, almost.
Hello.
Hi, Neil.
Who's speaking?
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Hey, not too bad. Yourself?
Good.
You can keep the content. There you go. How are you?
Great. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line. He's our boxing guru.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tony?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Enjoying Californian weather, although it has been a little bit overcast today. It's been lovely.
All right. And you're getting ready for a fight coming up in a month, I hear?
Yes, I am. I'm currently training at CSW with Josh Barnett and some of his training partners. So it's been quite nice sparring with guys my size and even bigger.
Right.
Doing quite well.
And you're fighting Zach Jensen. What do you know about him?
The little bit I know. I've seen one or two of his fights. I also know that he participated in The Ultimate Fighter. I was watching in particular because a guy that I've been in 2008 used to fight. He fought in there. He was one of the participants, James McSweeney. And yeah, I saw a bit of Zach then.
Right. Actually, we were talking before we got you on about James McSweeney because I remembered from that season of The Ultimate Fighter that he was on. Training was on. He got into a sort of a situation where he was bullying this guy and got into a fight in the house.
I think some guys need to portray being a bully or have the persona of to be menacing. Some of us don't need to do that. We just do that when we get into the cage.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't very fair the way that the kid didn't deserve it. And I just made the comment that it's good to see that you put the smack down on him.
There's a lot of people who dislike that sort of mentality or that sort of portrayal of an MMA fighter. I'm absolutely nothing like that at all.
I also noticed you had a win over the Colossus there, James Thompson. What was that like back in 2007? Even 10 seconds or 10 seconds left in the round?
Yeah, it was 10 seconds. James Thompson took the fight. Well, I took the fight short notice in 2 days. I'd literally just started MMA about 4 months before, 5 months before. I had my first fight. I was almost 36 years old. And a couple of months later, I was offered this fight. You know, I had absolutely nothing to lose. And then had a look at what James had done in the past. And, at that time, he was very well known as one of the five heavyweight fighters, and he was an exciting fighter. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to match him at what he does best. And, you know the end result. And since then, I've actually started loving MMA.
And what do you enjoy most about the sport itself?
Sorry, just repeat that.
What do you like most about the sport?
The fact that it's not one-dimensional. I know that there's a lot of guys who not saying it's going to take over from boxing. I think it's completely different to boxing, but there's a niche to boxing, and it will always have its loyal followers and stuff. I think what's happening at the moment is a lot of the younger guys are heading more towards MMA because there's a lot more involved. I love boxing. Obviously, it's one of the first fighting sports I was introduced to as a kid. My grandfather loved boxing. And then in the later years, when I moved to England in 1996, I eventually got introduced to my sensei and got seduced by Goju Ryu, just a combat-style karate.
Right.
And once I got my black belt, I just wanted to test my ability, and there was no better way of doing it than getting into a cage.
I actually had some people say to me with regards to, you know, their preference, you know, boxing or mixed martial arts. I'm more of a boxing guy. I mean, I grew up in the sport, competed in it for a number of years, I still train people in it. I have a couple friends of mine, and we're all around the same age, you know, early 30s and all that. I also know some of these people that are, like, you know, late teens in their 20s. And a lot of them are, you know, more going in towards the, you know, MMA. And I was talking to, you know, my one friend, and I said, you know, why? I said, you know, I said, I'm asking an honest question. Tell me why you prefer this one to this one. I mean, it's apples, oranges. Some people like apples, some people like oranges. But I said, you know, I want to know why. Tell me. And I think with him, I think it's the pace of it. You know, I mean, sometimes in a boxing match, you're going to get a Mike Tyson that comes charging out of the corner and winging punches, and you know, it's almost like a car wreck, and it's over, and everybody's wow. But a lot of times with boxing matches, even the really good ones, there's a lot of setup to it. Now, I personally love that. Like, I can watch a fight that, hey, there are some fights that I'll tell you, they suck. And I watched them, and I said, yeah, there was a knockout in that fight. But like, the fight went the distance, it was terrible. I said, yeah, I was out cold on the couch by the third round. But there's some fights that I can really get into and watch, and I can watch the one fight, and I'm like, okay, I can see the way he's moving. I'm like, he's baiting him for a right hand. And I have friends of mine watching, they're like, how do you see that? I'm like, watch, look at the way he's moving his shoulders. And they're like, I don't see it. And then I'll start training him a little bit, and they'll be coming over the house to watch some fights with me, or work out with me, I should say. And they work out with me, and I'm having them do this, and I have them hitting the pads and all that. And then they watch a fight with me again. They're like, I see where you can see that now. You can see him trying to catch and counter. We're like, now it makes sense. And I love that. I mean, that's all for me. But other people like the fast pace and, you know, not as much setup, more action from the start. That's like that apples, yeah. Apples, oranges, oranges.
Of course. I mean, you know, the beauty of what my sensei did to us when, I mean, I was old. I was 30 years old when I started doing karate, but, say old, 30 years young. When I started doing karate, he introduced us to the Welsh Boxing Federation, had some of those guys come and teach us boxing. And he was very open to other fighting styles, teaching us what they know best. And I love the boxing. I think if I decided to go into boxing, it would have been a different story. I would have been sitting there talking to you, saying to you, hell, man, to hell with MMA. But with boxing, I've sparred with clients since I've done sort of doing MMA. And if I say to you, okay, no kicking, I'm going to get a beating. I've tried, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of guys my sort of weight class. So now I'm struggling with a guy who's a middleweight and a light heavyweight, trying to hit him, but his head movement is so good. And the fact that he's leaving his legs there standing, and I could kick the crap out of him. But like I said, once you decide his hands, I mean, it's a very tough job being able to connect with a boxer and obviously defending from them as well. It's two completely different sports at the end of the day, and it's like you said, if you like apples, you're gonna eat apples, and if you don't, you're gonna eat something else. And I think there's definitely room for both sports. Boxing has been there a hell of a lot longer than in MMA, and I don't think it's, you know, it's ever going to be replaced. MMA is sort of just following. But MMA is just, is to me, is like you said, it's a very fast-growing sport. It's a very exciting sport. And as much as a guy who loves boxing, you'd say, you know, he prefers boxing, I bet most of them love watching two UFC fights.
So, obviously, you made a move over here to the United States for most of your fights. What was that like, you know, changing cultures and everything like that and coming over here to fight as opposed to fighting in England?
You know what? It's a much bigger sport. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, we can.
It's a much bigger sport here in America, and I found that with my first fight I had in Fort Lauderdale in Florida, I had more people chanting my name than I normally would have in England, which I found very funny because I know for a fact there weren't any English people in the crowd. And when I came over in January to come and train here, I found that American people are very much like South African people. You know, I was born in South Africa. I moved to England in 96. American people are extremely friendly. Now, when you're extremely friendly in Europe, it's like, what do you want? Whereas if you're friendly in America or friendly in South Africa, it's just how we are. The hospitality is fantastic. The service in the studio is brilliant. Nobody's been impolite to me since I've been here, which makes it a breath of fresh air. I'm sure there's a lot of haters around America too, but I haven't met one yet. So it's been refreshing. It's been really nice. I've made a couple of really nice friends now, and I've only been here 3 months, and they'll be friends for life. So yeah, the transition has been really, really nice, really good.
Cool. Now, what would you consider your greatest strength in sport?
My strength in the sport? My wrestling. Let me lie. Can I lie?
100% TKO rate. I don't know if it's
your my dream, and I don't know if you know that yet, is to submit my next opponent. Now, I don't care who it is, who I'm fighting, but I'd love to get a submission in, you know, under the belt and one of my wins. I've been working really hard on those. I've been working really hard with Josh. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, you know, I do what I do best. And like the question you're asking is, I like to strike. I love to punch. I love to kick. If I feel like I can go in there and kill, I'll finish the fight, put it that way. I go for it. I have been in situations where it's taken me around to sort of suss out what it is I need to do to win the fight. And then once I know, then I just go for it.
Now, going back to the answer to your last question, there's a book about South Africa called The Power of One. Have you ever read that? Seen the movie?
The Power of One?
Yeah.
No, I haven't, no.
Well, I definitely recommend that. It's a great
book. I like American movies.
Yeah, well, it was an American movie, but it was based in South Africa. And it was based loosely on the book. The book is much better, but... it was a movie starring Morgan Freeman as a boxing
okay.
in a prison. And
what?
You know, it's a young kid who ends up being his pupil as a student of piano, and then he comes to the prison and ends up learning how to box. And it's just a very interesting story, and I had never even knew anything about South Africa until I read it. It's really interesting. It's an unbelievable culture down there. And boxing is very big. I mean, there's always stuff on BoxRec. They're having fight cards all the time down there.
Yeah, boxing is definitely a much bigger sport in South Africa. I think MMA has just recently, in the last year or so, become a sport to watch.
Right. Now, as far as your future in the sport, what would you say is your ultimate goal going forward?
My goals are very short term. From now, I want to win this fight in May. They've got another fight planned for me in July. Bill's promised me a fight in July. Win that fight, and they told me I could get back in the tournament. I think I had a good following and a great response from people who watch Bellator regarding the way I fight. So I suppose it was an interest to get me back in there. And my dream then, I suppose, is to win the tournament and set things right between me and Conrad Cole. He's the heavyweight champion. He is one of the most phenomenal wrestlers in this country. He's really good at what he does. And unfortunately, when I faced him up for the title last year in October, I was more worried about his wrestling than making him worry about my striking. So I played into his hands, which, you know, he came out with a better game plan and won the fight for him square this time round. But regardless of the outcome. Say again?
Go ahead and say anything. Go ahead.
Sorry, regardless of the outcome, if we do face off each other for the title, I don't care who wins or not, but you're definitely going to have a different fight for me.
Awesome. Actually, Tony was mentioning before the call, he knows another guy that you ended up having a loss to with UFC 95, went to school with Mike Sismalevic. That was your UFC, your one-time UFC chance. What was that like, being on the big stage there?
You know, it's funny you say, because I was one of the earlier fights of the night, and I was fighting somebody who was easily beatable. Unfortunately, during the takedown somewhere, I broke some ribs, and it was really hard for me to get up and fighting against a guy who was a wrestling coach. Found myself in a lot of trouble and eventually had to have knee surgery and stuff. So that part of the fight, you know, has gone by. The fact that I was fighting in UFC was very exciting at the time. Unfortunately, I was cut off that fight. I could have had at least two fights, and it didn't happen. So, yeah, it was very quick in and out. I don't even really like people to say that I'm a UFC vet, because I spent less than 2 minutes there and I was sort of cut. So the experience wasn't favorable, but they've got some amazing heavyweight fighters in there right now. I've seen some guys I'd really like to compete with. But, you know, they're bygones. You got bygones, you know. Been there, done that, and did not want the tattoo.
Yeah, they're kind of arbitrary sometimes about how they throw people out, you know. One of the recent examples that kind of really ticked me off was Dan Hardy had a horrible fight his last time. And it was his third loss in a row. And they kept him.
You know what? I think at the end of the day, sorry to interrupt you, but at the end of the day, it depends on your manager. I know that my manager, Ken Pavia, is one of the best agents in the industry. He's the most loved and most hated person there, I suppose. He's got a lot of guys in the UFC, so they can't really get rid of him. But if I was managed by him, I'd still be fighting there. Unfortunately, my manager at the time, I think he was sort of given the choice between me and Steven Struve. Steven Struve is a great fighter. We'll not take that away from him. He lost against Junior Dos Santos the same night, but managed to fight again. And then I think he almost lost in Germany, but did really well coming back. And I went to go and support him because I think he's a great fighter. Now, he's not with the same manager anymore. I think he's with MC Hammer. And he's doing really well. Fair play and bad he's still in there. I don't know if he's been cut soon or not. I think he lost his last fight. But I think it all has to do a lot with your manager. And you know, I'm just blessed with the fact that I'm with Ken Pavia of MMA Agents, and He's looking after me.
Cool. He looks after us, too. He gives us good guests like you all the time. So, you know, we like him, too. As far as, you know, also with Bellator now being sort of like, you know, the number two league as far as makeup now with UFC owning Strikeforce, looks like you landed in a good spot either way, right?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah. Do you enjoy the Bellator situation now?
I think it's great because Bellator is offering something completely different to everybody else right now. I think they are more like Pride used to be, and I think Pride in its day was the best MMA event to fight in or, you know, to watch. Jon Whitney has the perfect idea when it comes to getting eight of the best fighters you can get hold of, make them fight for, you know, the tournament championship, and then get them to fight their champions, rather than leaving it up to matchmakers and bosses to decide, well, I like this guy more, and he's saying more nonsense about the next fighter, and people are loving it, and then they just start matching people up that way, and I think at some point it becomes unfair. Also with Bellator, I found that they are very loyal and very supportive. It's very hard for any sort of, let's say, beginner in the UFC to go up to Dana White and have a conversation with him and his parents. I've been able to do that with Bjorn, and Bjorn Redney has been not just only, you know, the CEO of the company, but he's been very supportive. It's a pleasure working for him and Tim. The rest of the team with Bellator, again, Rob Biner, who's in the production truck and he's a producer, Sean Wheelock, Jimmy Smith, the two commentators, they are all fantastic guys to work with. You know, all of them, the whole crew have been very supportive, and even after my loss, I've, you know, had emails and letters and Facebook inbox messages and all sorts of stuff, you know, get well and get better and come back. We love watching you fight. And, yeah, so when it's like that, it's a bit more intimate, and I'd recommend it for any fighter out there. You know, I suppose with the merger between Strikeforce and the UFC, you're going to find a lot of the fighters are going to lose their positions. You know, when the contracts end, they're going to be gone or they're going to get cut. And they're going to be looking out for places to fight in. And at the moment, it's like you said, Bellator is number two. And I don't think they're number two just because Strikeforce merged. Give them a couple of months. And I think with the new MTV2 deal, they definitely would have taken over from them without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it grow. I think when I first heard about it, I thought it was just unreal to just have that fight every single week, which is something the UFC has sort of moved to but never quite mastered. But yeah, Bellator has been able to keep it pretty consistent over the years, having a lot of cards, getting a lot of different people, a lot of experience. And, you know, it's kind of funny to me how there's always been rumors that it's about to fold, it's going under, and they just keep going, you know. It's like...
Yeah. No, I think the guys have been playing the media quite well. I like the fact that they keep everything very hush-hush before it comes out, and by doing so, not a lot of people can copy the way they do things. And, it's like you say, it's a very exciting show to watch. It's relevant to the viewer that is watching. It's exciting, you know, and I suppose with their commentary team and with the way the lighting is and the graphics and everything else that goes along with the show, it is quite nice to watch. I mean, there's a lot of shows out there. You know, when you look at the production itself, it's quite hard to watch. And I think the MTV2, it's a much better TV deal for them. And I've heard rumors that UFC are going somewhere else. And Spike, the same company owns Spike. I'm sure they're going to make way for Bellator at some point, and it'll be pushed onto that channel, which is going to make it even better to watch. And more exciting, and I'm loving the fact that I'm a part of Bellator and fighting for it. It's an exciting time.
Cool. Now, obviously, you're older than a lot of fighters. What's that like, fighting into your 40s? It's got to be pretty intense. Does it take a lot more out of you every day than the normal guy? Or?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's taking a lot longer for me to recover. But luckily for me, I started late in life. You know, I was almost 36 when I started, and I've not been knocked out yet. Sherdog says I have. They're lying. And I'd love them to fix it if they're listening. But I've not been knocked out. I've not been hit hard enough yet to want to quit. And I've had some broken ribs and some sore knees and elbows and stuff in the process. But while my body is still going and I'm eating healthy and looking after myself, I mean, about 2 to 3 months ago, I was training with Sean Wheelock, learning to become a commentator. So if anybody's listening out there, I'd love to start doing that too at some point. But I was training for about 2 months. For 6-7 weeks, I stopped training, and the weight just piled on. I suppose it's all the good food I've been having in America. And, in the last month or so, I've lost 30 pounds. And I've not lost pounds through going on a diet. I've just started eating healthy again, and it's very possible to get your body back into shape. And while you're doing so, you're going to keep yourself healthy. And while I'm healthy and, like I said, injury-free, I'm going to keep fighting until my body says, no, it's enough now. So I'm hoping to head in the same direction as Randy Couture. He's been an inspiration. He's probably the one and only guy that's kept me continuing in MMA and fighting. Like I said, just stay healthy, stay uninjured, and train at the right times and fight at the right times. I think if I did this 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I probably would have had a fight every 2 months and would have had to quit by now. So it's just timing and looking after yourself.
Right. You give me hope. I'm 33.
I've had so many guys come up to me and they're 35, 36. Oh, I'm going to give up on this. I said, dude, I started when I was your age. If I can do it, look at the size of me. I should have more problems than you. Just train properly. I mean, training has changed so much. I've been a personal trainer since 2001 and a sports therapist. And I've changed the way I've trained myself in the last 18 months, 2 years. I've changed it completely. It's just amazing how everything is now sort of MMA-based. I actually did an MMA strength conditioning course, and the way fighters are training today is a lot different to the way guys trained 10 years ago. Completely different.
Right. Now, I always was a boxer, but I started watching MMA in about 2006, and I had a good wrestling career in high school. I didn't get any championships or anything. It's the JV state championship my first year, but I really hope that. But I thought about it over the years, and everybody said I ought to get into it. I was training for boxing again. Whenever I got into a street fight, because I watched so much MMA, I'd always end up resorting to it at some point. But I eventually ended up watching Jose Aldo versus Cub Swanson. It's one of the WEC fight nights they had on before they had that merger. And I think he demolished him in like 18 seconds. It was like a flying knee. Cub Swanson fell face first on the mat, and then Jose Aldo hit him 6 times in the head before the ref got in and stopped the fight. So anybody that can do that to you in a sport, I don't know if I want to be a part of it. It's so rich. But definitely something that I loved watching. I love the stories of people that have interesting backgrounds and have had to go through different struggles. And I noticed that around the time that MMA started to really explode, for me especially, with the time I started watching it in 2006, there were a lot of boxers, too, coming back from retirement or coming out of the shadows in their late 30s and early 40s, and you know, trying to kind of drum up more interest in that sport at the same time. You know, just like bringing big names back into the circle. But in MMA, MMA, I've noticed it seems like a lot of these older legends, especially in the UFC and in the main events of some of these other fight cards promotions, the younger guys just seem to just have so much more well-rounded skill. That, you know, again, case in point, John Bones Jones coming out, being 23 years old, I think he is, and he ends up being like Hua. You know, guys like Randy getting smacked around by Brock Lesnar, who's only got less than a dozen fights the guy has, and he's been a champion already. So it's just amazing to me how just these young, talented athletes get involved, and then, you know, they just pick up things so much quicker, it seems. So it's all the more impressive that a guy like you is still mounting with that kind of climate.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys have made the transition quite easy. I think it's a lot easier when they're younger. What's great about being in America is you've got the wrestling going on in the schools and colleges. So most of them just really need to start learning how to strike. And then obviously you get the guy who's the boxer who just needs to go and learn a bit of jiu-jitsu. And when I say it, but, you know, look at somebody like George St. Pierre. They go a little bit over the top and become the best at everything they do. And but it's always good, and I thought this, it's always good to have some form of foundation in fighting. These kids are coming out from the street saying, I'm a street fighter. Normally the ones who have three or four fights and then they're out of the business. But if you look at somebody who's trained in something for years, they're the ones who can do the transition and deal with the losses and, you know, just come back stronger and better from it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely noticed, you know, that wrestling and striking are probably the two top disciplines that, or I don't know if you could call striking a discipline, but the two best bases for fighters these days. I noticed, especially in the UFC, that, like we talked about earlier, the rate of fighters getting kicked out so often depends on, you know, whether they put on a show or not. And, you know, this is like the public line that they spout, which you got to put on a show.
The
fight go to the ground, so they either boo or yell at the ref to stand him up. But, you know, so the fighters end up adapting, I think, not only for the show aspect to keep their jobs, but also for the knockout bonuses to try to, you know, stay on the feet and please the crowd and get your knockout bonus.
I mean, it's definitely a massive incentive. It's something I've actually did mention to the guys at Bellator. Because it happens. It happens. You get the wrestler who knows you can win the fight by just controlling the guy on his back. But, you know, say to him, make the fight a little bit more exciting, I'll pay you the extra couple of $1,000s, and I'm sure they're going to transition from just trying to control the fight by trying to finish it.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's better for the growth of the sport to have it sort of more angled that way. And, you know, it's might not be great for the health of the athletes in the long run, you know, if they're encouraged to just beat the crap out of each other and hit each other in the head all the time. But, you know, the sport is, you know, brutal as it is, so no matter what way it ends, you know, it could be. Could be a tough fight, and you could have a lot of injuries in your career overall. So, you know, the jury's still out on whether it's more dangerous than boxing or not. Because I've heard statistics that show that although the brain damage in boxers is more pronounced over the long term, there's more concussions in MMA per capita. So that was sort of an interesting statistic I heard about a couple of years ago when it was younger. But either way, you know, it's like, you know, the one thing that gets people talking is the big knockouts. If you look at the heyday of boxing in recent years, it was when Mike Tyson was knocking everybody out in the first round. So, MMA, I think, is sort of leaning towards that same type of mentality. You gotta really dominate your opponent and get the knockouts to get the attention and move up the ranks and really please the fans overall.
That's why I'm so excited to watch the... Sorry, you still there?
Yep,
we're here. It's such an exciting fight every time John Bones Jones is going to be fighting because... And Anderson Silva. There's a couple of fighters out there that are really, really nice to watch. You know, they stand out. Like the Mike Tysons did in the 80s and 90s when it came to boxing. And then you obviously get the guy who's just going to do what he needs to do. I think George St. Pierre, you know, was very exciting to watch. Now what he does is what a champion does. Do what's needed to win. I think a lot of guys think he's boring, but I still find him exciting, and it's more of a mental game with him, and I think watching him fight is watching him think at the same time. So he's facing Diaz, not Diaz, sorry. Who's he facing next? Jake Shields. Who is a very good, very, very good wrestler. So I'm hoping that he's not going to try and out-wrestle him, but out-strike him. So it's going to be an exciting fight.
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting dynamic with the wrestling, too, the way it gets so much weight on the scorecards. You know, if a guy gets a certain takedown at a certain time in a fight, he can win the round. You know, whereas there is boxing aspects of the scoring, too, or a knockdown or... you know, a punch that stuns a guy and forces him up against the cage or something will score points. But, you know, if a guy gets more takedowns than the other guy in a round where there's not much action, he's going to win the round.
Yeah.
Okay. So wrestling plays a huge role in, you know, George St. Pierre being considered one of the best pound-for-pound fighters out there. Having such good wrestling is important to that. But he's also training with Freddie Roach and his boxing. He's trying to rapidly evolve his game. And he seems to be aware of that trend where some of these older guys with the big names get caught up by these younger kids. Jake Shields isn't necessarily a kid, but you know, he's got an impressive record. It's going to be a hell of a fight. But, I think it's interesting how Anderson Silva and John Jones are already being paired up by the fans. They want to see that before they want to see Shahad. Tells us just how much one fight can do for your momentum.
Yeah, to me, that's the most important thing, is making sure you keep the fights as exciting as you can. Because the more exciting you are, the more people are going to want to watch you fight. And the more events are going to want to, write, you know, book you to fight for them. So I think it's just the inevitable. It's like this is a growing sport. People love to watch a war. I think it's always a lot nicer watching somebody get finished. Doesn't matter whether it's a knockout or ground and pound or submission, but what's important is that the guys start learning how to finish fights.
Right. Well, like Dana White is fond of saying, don't leave it in the hands of the judges. You gotta take a guy out if you really want to guarantee your win. Because that's a lot of it. That has a lot to do with it, I'm sure. But I think the bad decisions have kind of cooled off. You know, there have been a few of them. I actually saw a really bad decision at the last live boxing match I went to, where a guy who lost the fight ended up escaping with the draw, because he was the hometown guy. And the one card that didn't have the draw had it a mile ahead for the other guy, who I thought won the fight.
Yeah. I think what's important is with the scoring and with the judging, unfortunately, I think a lot of the commissions in the different states would employ a boxing referee, or not a referee, boxing a judge. And therefore, sometimes they see it wrong. And I think in places where they don't, the scoring, for instance, for a takedown, okay, great. It's a skill. But to win a fight because you took him down is and just laid there is not exciting, and for the average person that watches MMA, they're not going to understand why.
Right. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say thanks?
Well, actually, Rich, I was yawning real quick. I had something to put in. I had to take a quick drink and a quick yawn. There's something I wanted to mention about scoring. Scoring, they make so complicated, and I'm not talking about, like, point-wise. I'm talking about it's complicated, you know, in the judge's eyes. You know, you know, doesn't matter what sport we're talking about here. It could be boxing, it could be martial arts, whatever. And let me just go into boxing because that's a sport I know a lot better. Okay, I'm sitting there as the judge. Okay, I'm watching it. What are my four criteria of scoring? Clean puncher, effective aggressiveness, you know, ring generalship and defense. Okay. Well, this guy, yeah, he's looking good. He fainted. Ooh, yeah, boy, okay, yeah, I think I like that feint. Oh, that guy just hit him. No, now what's going on? Oh, my goodness. Oh, that guy blinked twice. Oh, he's losing because he blinked. Oh, dear Lord. Then the round's over, and it's like, what the hell did I just watch? I liked the guy because he had the prettier shorts on. Or the guy, it cheered more for him. They make it so complicated. And the person that I follow the most with judging is Max Kellerman. Max Kellerman makes a brilliant point. He's watching a fight. Now, obviously, this has to take into account, you can't take into account anything that happened illegal, because you know, you can sit there and say, okay, at the end of that round, if I could be one of those two fighters, who would I have rather been that round? And he sort of said, okay, we'll take an example. We got a big fight this weekend between Eric Morales and Marcos Madonna. And okay, Morales is moving around, he's using his jab and whatever. Yeah, and he landed, you know, 15 punches, but most of them were jabs. And, you know, he didn't really get anything accomplished. Madonna only landed 4 punches, but they were, you know, thudding shots to the body and a couple good shots to the head that sent the smoke spraying off his head. Who would I have been that round? I would have rather been Madonna. I give that round to him 10-9. Now, of course, you're not going to put it in there the fact that, okay, I got Morales and Madonna fighting, and Morales was kicking his ass in this round, but they had a clash of heads and he got cut. I'd rather be, you know, Madonna because Morales got cut. No, you don't put it like that. It's, in terms of clean, effective boxing, who would I have rather been that round? And then you give that person a 10-9. I've been doing that for the last decade, and I would put myself ahead of most of the judges you find out in Vegas. The judges that scored that fight you were at, Rich, a few weeks ago, I put myself ahead of them.
Yeah. That was a pretty brutal fight. And the kid who actually ended up with the draw, I mean, well, both of them ended up with the draw, but the kid who didn't deserve to win, Ethan kind of looked shocked when they read off the decision that it was that close. But it happens, you know. It's, everybody can fight different. And, you know, it's one of those things that you really can't control about the sport. You know, there's solutions as far as educating judges better. But even then, you know, you're going to have a subjective view. You're going to have people that maybe are favorites or have the hometown kid as their favorite, you know. Or God forbid there's bribery involved. You know, there's all sorts of influences that you got to watch out for, whether it's MMA or boxing these days. It's just kind of... one of those things that's out there. But if you get the knockout, you don't have to worry about those judges.
No. Finish the fight.
Yeah. And you definitely have learned that over the years. It's 100% knockout rate. I don't think we've ever had anybody on the show with 100% knockout rate with as many fights as you have.
Yeah. Well, the two other fights, one where it was a majority decision, and I think the other two judges were drinking. and then I had a draw once before as well. Again, I just thought the judges must have been smoking something, because when you watch those fights again, I definitely landed more strikes. My defense was a lot better, like, you know, with the takedowns and stuff. But it's like you say, don't leave it up to the judges. Finish the fight. Give the guys an incentive. Give them a knockout bonus. Give them a submission bonus. Fight is a night bonus. So even if you are evenly matched up and couldn't knock the guy out or couldn't submit him, make the fight exciting. Yeah, show some blood. Finish the fight. That's my motto. I've never really gone into a fight thinking I'm going to outscore this guy. I've always gone in there saying, this is a war. You know, I've got to go and win this fight. I'm not playing. I want to do as little as I have to make the most amount of money. So go in there and win the fight.
Yeah, actually, I was really disappointed last night watching the Ultimate Fighter, the latest fight there, where it went to an overtime round. And nobody wanted to see those guys go two rounds after the first round. You know, it was just like so ugly and sloppy, and nobody was really doing much, for most of the rounds. It was just grappling against the fence. And there were so few takedowns, so few big shots in the whole fight that, to watch it go three rounds, it was more annoying for me to watch it than enjoyable. You know, you have to kind of stick it out to the end to see what happens. But it's just like, you know, you want to scream through the TV at these guys to punch each other, do something exciting. You know, a lot of the fans have grown up quite a bit, I think. They don't scream for it as much or boo the ref when the fight goes to the ground. But they still get impatient when it stays there. They definitely like the more exciting toe-to-toe strike. But we're getting pretty late in the hour here. We're getting into the second hour, so I don't want to hold you too much. I know you probably got stuff to do tonight out there in California. Beautiful weather out there.
It's a little bit with me today, but it's been fantastic.
All right. Do you have anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello or thanks to out there?
I'd just like to thank my fans and friends and family. They've been very supportive. And the growing fan base here in America, it's my wish, it's been my dream to fight over here and just keep my fights exciting enough for them to keep wanting to watch. I'd like to give a big up on Bellator Fighting Championships. I think it's the best MMA event to fight for. And then my manager, Ken Pavia, of an MMA agent, I hope he's listening and make sure that he gets me a lot of sponsorship in the process.
Right, yeah. There you go. Well, we definitely appreciate having you on. We wish you the best of luck, although it sounds like you're not going to need it as long as you get your good striking in and keep that up. If you do win your next fight by submission, more power to you. It's a sign of your game getting more well-rounded, I guess. So it shows that you're keeping up with these younger guys. But either way, we'll definitely keep our eye on you, start watching you a lot more, and maybe we'll have you on again sometime in the future.
Fantastic.
And maybe as an announcer then, who knows? Good luck with that too, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'd like to say good luck to my friend Paul Sensex Daly, who's fighting on Saturday against Diaz for the Strikeforce Welterweight Championships. And also, I'd like to thank Josh Barnett on air for everything he's been showing me and teaching me. It's been educational.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by, and you have a good night. Enjoy the California weather, and keep training hard.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
So that's Neil Goliath Groves. That was a very interesting interview. He definitely has the South African accent, I noticed. South African British.
Yeah, I could definitely pick up on some of the British accent there.
By the way,
they report nothing good on Career Builder tonight, but I did apply for 4 jobs last week on there and one earlier in this week that I think has a lot of good potential.
Cool. Have you tried?
Well, it's funny, but a lot of my, customers hate me because I act like I act, and they call up and I want to bitch about this, and I just, pretty much I'm like, I get that taken care of for you. Okay, shut up now. But I actually had one customer that his office is only about 10 minutes from my house, and when we had our quality control person going there to, see how everything was going, mentioned me by name saying that I'm awesome and, couldn't ask for better contact. So I was like, so I emailed him the one day, and I was talking to him, and he's trying to get me in at this company, which is 15 minutes closer. Probably, we don't have this confirmed, get more money and better vacation. I mean, my vacation schedule sucks. I took 2 days off a couple weeks ago. Nobody touched any of my work. I came back, I had to do other people's work. And I don't have another day off probably until August or September. That sucks. That puts me in a bad mood. But, Rich, so we got all that, going on, getting taken care of. I got that, the article that was written about me, about doing the Rocky stuff, that just got sent to me in the mail today. So maybe I have to scan it and send it to you. I'll see how I can get that done, or I'll ask for the electronic version. Maybe we'll get that posted on the site. I got the Mosley Pacquiao article that I'm going to start working on in a few weeks. So I'll get that in about maybe a week or two before the
Yeah, I guess the night has this for this weekend's fight, and it's the same people that are doing that fight, but they said it might have been because I was a little late with my application, but hopefully not. Hopefully that was the only reason, because they're the same, it's the same place and the same promoter that's doing the Pacquiao Mosley fight. So I'm going to be really pissed if I miss that. If I miss this, that's not a big deal, but... sucks, but hey, it's not the biggest fight in the world. Although I really
It has the potential to be good, but it also has the potential to be a mismatch because I really don't think Eric Morales should be fighting anymore.
Well, we'll definitely start through in a few minutes, but I want to go down to the National Collegiate Boxing Association. And I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but Eddie Wishers, the coach of Air Force Academy, had pretty good luck at his regional tournament there out west where his team took the number one spot. They took their 31st NCBA regional title at the end of March there.
They won the Western Division. Well, you know what? I mean, Eddie always did a really great job with that team. And, the one thing about the service academies, and especially for the longest time, Navy and Air Force, Army really over the last maybe 7 or 8 years has really picked it up. That they've won the national title a few times. But it used to be for years was always between Air Force and Navy.
Right.
To the point where it's usually here with the big rivalry, Army and Navy, and the big Army-Navy game and all that, but not in college boxing. In college boxing, it was always Air Force and Navy. I mean, to the point when the year before I started at Lock Haven, Lock Haven was hosting the 94 Nationals. So they had it in Harrisburg at a big convention center. When we went down to Kentucky, we didn't stay at the University of Kentucky. We stayed at that big Holiday Inn. But they said, a lot of the Air Force kids, when they were there for the tournament, they had painted their hotel room blue and silver with big words saying "Go Air Force, beat Navy." And
and believe me, the hotel was pissed off. Dr. Cox was, I mean, Dr. Cox talked about that until his dad graduated. One day, man, force kids. Rich kids, mommy and daddy paid for this. I'm not a spoiled little rich kid. And you got another Air Force kid, I want you to knock him the fuck out, you know. And Dr. Cox pissed about that. So he said, to the day I graduated, and probably still, I see him, I'll say, Dr. Cox, remember that time Air Force kids paid in the hotel in Harrisburg? And he'll probably get fired up all again, like 15, 16 years later. But, yeah, I mean, for a long time, it was always between Air Force and Navy, Air Force and Navy. And then, like I said, Reno always had contenders in there. Lockhaven was always pushing for, you know, one of the top spots. But the thing with Air Force and Navy is because, for one, they had so many students, and two, that the fact that, you know, boxing was at least a, you know, like a required semester, they could cherry pick, you know.
Change that, because I guess there was a lawsuit or something. But I remember when I was there, they had just changed that. So it was an intramural sport that was voluntary. But I think West Point might be the only school that actually requires it at any level.
And you know what? Except Navy used to. I knew that. And because I remember one time when I was a junior, and, you know, we were going down for, like, it was like our first card of the year. It was more like exhibition, really. And they put me in there with this one Navy kid, and it was like our first semester of boxing. I didn't know. I'm coming off a knee injury, so like, I wanted to really look good. And I ended up, you know, pretty much putting a beating on this poor guy. And then, I was like, after it was over, you know, I was like, man, I gotta kick the crap out of him. And then my dad was like, you know, talking to me, and like, yeah, this is my first semester of boxing, you know, it was a requirement. I'm like, oh, man, poor kid got forced in the ring and took a punish, took a pummeling. But that was the thing, like, with those schools at the time, when they had it, like, mandatory, they could cherry pick. So it's like, okay, we got Air Force, we got these 500 kids in boxing right now. Boy, you see that one kid, he's around 120 pounds, bet you get him down to 112. We are in 112, nobody else, boom, he's already in the Nationals.
Yeah.
They would be going to the regionals with a guy in every, they have box-offs in every weight class. So they're putting the best of the best in there. You know, Lockhaven was like, okay, we got three good guys and four weight classes. How are we going to, well, you know what? We'll put, Penny Cal will put him at 180 or 172. Where do you want to go? Okay, we're going to put you at 180 for this one. We'll put so-and-so in at 172. He probably doesn't have a chance, but you never know. He's a dark horse. And then we'd have a good guy at 165, a good guy at 156, me good at 180. 172, we know we're not going anywhere with. You know, there was no box office. Because we wanted to put a guy at 172, and he was our guy. Boom, he's going to get his ass kicked.
One good thing about the way Air Force Academy runs their boxing program, and I speak from experience, I did spend a year there. They have the intramural program. They also have the boxing team, and then they have the wing open, which if I had a chance to fight anywhere, at any time, against anyone, even if it didn't go on my record, I would have rather fought at the wing open than the National Collegiate Boxing Association championships the year I participated there, because it was really electric, and they packed that whole corps of cadets in.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when we were freshmen, we came in with like 1,200 kids or 1,400 kids, I think, and we ended up with less than 1,000 at the end of the year. And they do it, I think, in the second semester, right before the regular boxing season starts. And they have a very nice athletic facility now. It's probably nicer now than when I was there in 95. But it's really a big event, and everybody loves it. It was one of the things that really inspired me to do Friday Night Fights on campus at Norwich when I got there. But it's just such a tremendous program that they have. And the fights are always competitive. And once you get that experience, before you even go and compete, because there's a lot of freshmen who participate. I didn't get to because I was on academic probation. But you know, a lot of freshmen get the chance to get in there, and that's their first major tangle in front of a crowd. And it's the biggest crowd they'll probably ever see in the National Collegiate Boxing Association, unless they get to the championship level and there's a big venue. This year, the Nationals start tonight at West Point. They go through the 9th. So Saturday night. So we'll definitely keep our eye on the Air Force guys and all the service academies, Lockhaven too, of course. They won not too long ago, right? 2 years ago.
Lockhaven won in 07, and then they've really been having trouble since.
Well, Air Force is going to be running and gunning for the titles in this one, I think.
I don't know how the teams at Reno is looking this year. I don't know how, Penn State or, you got other schools like, I was in part of it now. A lot of schools that weren't around when I was even there. You're looking at things like, it's going to be right now a three-team race between Army, Navy, and Air Force, the service academies. And then, but here's how Lockhaven won it. Those three schools were beating the living crap out of each other in the 07 Nationals. And it was like nobody was like dominant. So you had a situation where it's like, okay, Army took a national title here, beat an Air Force kid. Navy then beat an Army kid for a national title. Then Air Force beat a Navy kid. And blah, blah, blah. Lockhaven won a couple national titles. And all the service cadets ended up eliminating each other.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic sometimes. But let's,
by the way, Rich, I got to ask you a question before I forget. How are your Boston Red Sox doing?
I don't even know. This is the one year I haven't even watched a game yet. The season's already started. But I know they're doing that well.
If you would have watched the game, I guarantee you wouldn't have been a game they won.
They're 0 for the season so far? Is that
everything? They're 0-6.
Oh, man. Rough.
They got shut out 1-0 by Cleveland today.
Yikes. Now I got a guy that you work for the Battle of the Badges for, who is a Red Sox executive, and he was telling me during spring training that this is one of the best teams that he's ever seen. So I don't know where he's getting his intelligence from. I guess spring training is a lot different than the regular season. But let's just hope it's not a season like the Cubs had years back where I think they lost like 13 in a row to start the season or something.
My second favorite team right now is the Pittsburgh Pirates for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Phillies, I think, have one of the all-time longest losing records where they lost 23 in a row. That was back in the 60s, so I wasn't alive to see that. But the Phillies had set the record for most consecutive losing seasons at 16. And it would have been much more than that, except they had that one great season in 93 when they went to the World Series. But then it was like 16 consecutive years or something. It was something ridiculous like that. It was back in, I think, like the, Rich, I don't know when the hell that was. It might have been back in like the 60s or 70s or whatever. Because I remember they had a lot of losing seasons for a while. And then, they would have another long-ass record, except 93 broke that up. But then the Pirates just had their 17th consecutive losing season last year, and most likely will make it 18 this year.
Well, yeah, I can't even believe the baseball season started already.
Yes, they can.
But getting back to boxing, we've got to talk about your boy, Hank Lundy. He had a great performance the other night. Probably should have spent the whole fight as a southpaw. But he did still dominate. Definitely won the fight, hands down. He played a little trick on his opponent. And he's usually an orthodox fighter, but he went southpaw. And Jeddy Atlas predicted it. And he did it. And he ended up dominating, really, in that stance. But as soon as he went back to orthodox, he had a lot of difficulty. Seemed like he had trouble keeping himself balanced, keeping himself in range, and just landing shots. And when he went back to southpaw at the end of the fight, it was just back to the same old domination. And it was interesting because even though Teddy predicted it, I don't think either announcer realized that he had gone back to southpaw, I mean, to back to orthodox, until like 3 rounds after he did it, which was interesting, because I noticed it right away. It was just like, oh, there he goes, back to orthodox, but he just did it in a way where it was not as noticeable to I guess. But he definitely proved he's back from that loss. He faced a real tough opponent there. But it was still kind of a blowout. So I'm looking forward to
it. I didn't think that. Well, I thought the judge that had it like 98-90 was completely way offline. I had it 96-93, giving Hank six rounds of an extra point for the knockout. He caught him with a good shot. He put him down. He hit him with some other good shots. But there were times that I just don't think he did enough out there. Now, he fought a good fighter, Patrick Lopez. I've actually covered Patrick Lopez. He fought a couple times in Philadelphia. And he's a good fighter, but I think Hank could have done more. I mean, hey, he stuck to his game plan, and I give him credit for that. I like the guy. But, you know, when you're really stepping up to that next level and to step up to the next level in that division for a title, you're going to be looking at guys. You had some good lightweights out there. You got guys like the Peterson brothers, and you know he's around 135 to 140. So it's like, you know, would he be able to beat a Timothy Bradley with that kind of performance? I'm not sure. Would he be able to move up and fight a Zab Judah at like 140 or 147? No, I don't think so. Let me try to see who else is at lightweight right now that you know, be comparing them with. I just wanted to see more.
Okay.
I'm actually popping out my ring. Oh, by the way, I got a bet with my dad with regards to Ring Magazine that I can get my picture in it. but let's look at some of these names, David. You got you know, one on one guy there. I mean, I don't think he'd be ready for a guy like Marquez. Humberto Soto is a good fighter. Michael Cassidy. Your boy Ali Funeka, who's about 8 feet tall and 135 pounds. Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who we've mentioned several times in the show. Those are some really top-notch lightweights. The junior welterweight, you got Timothy Bradley, you got Amir Khan, Marcus Maidana, Devin Alexander, Lamont Peterson, Victor Ortiz. Those are a lot of really good fighters, and I just didn't think there was enough done to validate saying that he's on par with those guys.
Right.
We're ready to beat them.
Yeah, actually, Robert Guerrero is looking really good. He's actually training in Vegas now. I didn't get a chance to go to his open workouts or anything, but he is training in Vegas for the last few months, and he's fighting a real tough opponent in Texas this weekend, but I think he's in the best
shape. Very good fight.
So I'm definitely going to bet on Guerrero in that one. Not actually bet, but, in a general sense of the word bet, even though I am in Vegas and I could put some money on it, I definitely...
I wonder what the odds are on that fight.
You what?
I said, I wonder what the odds are on that fight.
I don't know, that's a good question. It was kind of funny because when I was going up to the third floor to the venue where they had the fights at the Cosmopolitan there, guy saw my sweatshirt that says Fighting is Unlimited and the press badge and everything. And he says, who do you like in the fights? And I go, well, it depends on which one. And he's like, anybody, just give me anybody. And you could tell he was going right down to the sports book to do some betting. You know?
Yeah.
So I just said, oh, Lara's going to win, definitely. So I hope he didn't bet because, I don't think betting on a guy to win, you make out very well when it's a draw. But, man, that was the only fight I picked. I hadn't even really done the research that I usually do when I make those kind of picks. And I kind of went in there blind for all those fights. So that guy's out there listening. You lost your shirt. Hey. Not my greatest strength there, I guess, handicapping fight. So I'll have to... do some research next time I try to do that. But we also have Morales versus Maidana on that card. Like I said, Guerrero versus Cortez.
Briefly said earlier, I definitely have to go with Maidana on that. Morales, started his career, featherweight, junior lightweight.
hey, he has a win over Manny Pacquiao, a legitimate decision win over Manny Pacquiao. I guess it was about 5 years ago. So you got to give him that. But, and here's the but. Then there are two subsequent fights. Pacquiao absolutely annihilated him. He stopped him in the 10th round in their second fight. And then in the third fight, it wasn't even a fight. He walked right through him like he did Ricky Hatton. And, I mean, he just pummeled Morales and Canvas in the third round. And I just don't see where Morales seems to be fighting anymore. You know, I mean, the guy took just a frightful punishment in that second Pacquiao fight. And that was late 06, early 07, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not 100% sure on that, but, I mean, you're going back a couple of years. I mean, and obviously you don't see a guy improving during that time.
Right. We also have a pretty interesting Friday night fight card, David Lemieux versus Marco Antonio Rubio.
That'd be a good fight. That's a title eliminator where the winner should be guaranteed a title shot. Rubio is a good, tough fighter. What's his record?
49-5 with 42 knockouts and one draw.
Somebody knocked him the hell out, though. I remember that.
Three knockouts.
Somebody starched him on the Hopkins De La Hoya undercard with like one punch, drilled him, and I can't remember who it was. Kofi Jantua drilled him with a left hook and knocked him out. But Rubio's a good fighter. You know, he's fought a lot of good guys. Now he's fighting, you know, a young up-and-coming prospect who's got thunderbolts on each hand. I mean, I think David Lemieux is a real deal. He's beaten some fighters. You know, he's stepping his, caliber of opposition up. But he absolutely just annihilated Hector Camacho Jr., knocked him out cold. I watched it on YouTube, and I was cracking up.
Yeah, Lemieux is actually, he's got almost the same knockout percentage as our guest tonight. I don't know what the actual percentage is. 96%. So only one of his wins did not come by knockout, and that was against Jason Nogler back in February of 2010. And Nogler's record was 18-11-1 at the time. And it was a unanimous decision after 10 rounds. But it was a blowout. I mean, all three judges scored at 100-89. That's about as low as you can get.
Yeah, he probably had a knockdown scored in there, too, for the extra point, or he pummeled him so bad one round, or maybe they took a point away from the guy. I don't know. But, you know, he definitely didn't lose any of the time out there. I've been very impressed with him from what I've seen.
Another interesting fact about Lemieux's record is he has never been out of the fifth round other than that one fight with Nogler. He's got all his KOs, five rounds or less, which is pretty impressive. But it's going to be up there in Quebec, Canada on ESPN2.
I think the thing that's really going to be playing against Rubio is the fact that Rubio is not a guy that's going to come out and box you or try to, you know, use skill. Rubio is going to come out and he's going to try to impose his will. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's going to try to be aggressive. And I think he's really going to be walking into some shots.
Right. Actually, I have a pretty interesting card over in Hyogo, Japan on Friday as well. We get a bunch of 12-round fights, three 12-round fights. All good match opponent-wise. We have a featherweight at the main event for the WBC featherweight title. Hozumi Hasegawa, who's 29-3 with 12 knockouts, fighting Johnny Gonzalez, who's 47-7 with 41 knockouts. My lucky number, 47, by the way. Today is April 7th, so 47 right there. And 7-11, too, because it's the old 2011. I should go to the craps tables, I guess. But also, there's another WBC title fight on this card. All three of them are title fights. We have a super bantamweight fight between Toshiaki Nishioka, 7-4, 3 draws, 23 knockout wins, fighting Mauricio Javier Munoz, 21-2 with 9 knockouts. And then we have super featherweight, finally, Takahiro Ao, who's 20-2 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw, and Humberto Mauro Gutierrez, 28-2 with 20 knockouts, 1 draw. That's for the WBC super featherweight title. So it seems like it's a bunch of Japanese guys versus a bunch of Hispanics. that's going to be interesting. So all these guys going over to Japan for the big fight. Japan's been suffering with the MMA community being so out of whack because of these earthquakes, but apparently the boxing's still going strong. We have a mismatch of the week in Mexico. 10-round light flyweight fight between Jesus. It's the Jesus fight of the week, too. Jesus Silvestre, who's 20-2 with 16 knockouts, fighting 0-0-0, no name. The guy doesn't even have a name. He's on BoxRec. His record is there. He doesn't even have a name listed. There's no names listed here on this whole card. It's records, but no names. I've never seen that on BoxRec. That's funny. Well, he's fighting the Invisible Man. Well, that's definitely a mismatch. It stays like that. Else. But over in Phuket, Thailand, we also have a couple interesting fights. Another mismatch of the week. We got Turd. What a name this guy has. Super featherweight fight between Turd Sack Kokiet. That's how it sounds. T-E-R-D-S-A-K. Turd Sack. That's his first name. But he's 42-3. 28 knockouts and 1 draw, and he's fighting Singo Canaro, who's 2-9. Rough, rough. It's going to be the fight of Canaro's life if he wins that one. There's also the main event is between Saad Kokiet Jim, must be related. There's 3 Kokiet Jims on the same card. And he's 48-2, 1 draw, 19 knockouts, fighting Gilo Merlin, who's 10-8. With 1 draw. That's for the WBO Asia Pacific Super Bantamweight title. Which is a belt that I never dreamed of getting myself, that's for sure. I don't think I was ever a flyweight or anywhere close to it. Also on Showtime, we have the Friday night fights this week from Laredo, Texas. We got Marcus Johnson, 20-0, at super middleweight. 15 knockouts, fighting Daya Davis, who's 18-2 with 9 knockouts and 1 draw. And good old Willie Nelson, not the Willie Nelson you're thinking of, probably, but he's welterweight, fighting an 8-rounder. He's 16-0, with only 1 draw and 10 knockouts. He's fighting Vincent Arroyo, who's 10-1 with 7 knockouts. And then a guy we've had on before, Danny O'Connor, like welterweight, 14-0. With 3 knockouts, fighting Gabriel Bracero, who's 14-0 with 1 knockout. So pretty evenly matched there. That's about the best. It's the top 3 for that card. We go to Buffalo Bills Star Arena in Nevada on Friday. There's some Telefutura fights, and the main event's really the best one. Jesse Vargas, that's welterweight, who's 14-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Vivian Harris, 29-5, 19 knockouts, 1 draw. Vicious.
And it's also another fighter seen some better days.
Right. See, guy who's 0-11, 1 draw, is fighting a guy who's 18-12 with 11 knockouts. Not quite a mismatch, but could be. That's for the Dominican Republic light middleweight title, by the way. That's a first for the show. I think we've ever mentioned that one.
Cool.
Then we go to the Passe de Calais, France, for Gian Salinghe at lightweight. She's 28-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Domenico Urbano, 23-2, 1 draw, 9 knockouts, for the vacant World Boxing Federation Intercontinental lightweight title. The vacant IBF International Bantamweight title and the vacant WBA Intercontinental Bantamweight title is on the line, also in France on Saturday, between Mohamed Bouleg Shah, who is 15-5 with 4 knockouts, and Michael Arango, who is 32-10 with 25 knockouts. Let's see what else we got. Got a pretty good fight set up over in Germany between a guy I'm a big fan of. I saw one of his last, I don't know, must have been at least a year ago, I saw one of his better fights between a guy who was almost a mirror image of him. Robert Stieglitz at super middleweight. He's 39-2 with 23 knockouts, fighting Karen Gavor, who's 31-5 with 16 knockouts for the WBO super middleweight title. And then, as Germans like to do, we have a female fight on the co-main event setup between super featherweights Ramona Kuhn, who's 17-1 with 5 knockouts, and Michelle Larissa Bonasoli, who's 11-5 with 9 knockouts. As for the WBF female super featherweight title and the WBO female super featherweight title, and also the WIBF super featherweight title. This is an interesting fight in Mexico for the WBC Caribbean Boxing Federation super featherweight title. Gamaliel Diaz, 30-9 with 15 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Cesar Soto, who's 63-22 with 3 draws and 43 knockouts. That's a lot of knockouts. 43. Jeez. Let's see what else we got. George Foreman's son is fighting this weekend as the main event.
In I didn't know he was up to 11-0 by now.
Yeah, with 10 knockouts.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised.
And no surprise, his name is also George, but he goes by the nickname Monk. And this is a 6-round heavyweight fight. He's fighting a guy named Eric Lindsay, who's 3-10, with only 1 knockout to his credit and 8 knockout losses. So chances are he's going to move. George is going to move to 12-0.
We'll see. I mean, I've seen weirder things happen.
I read a report today that said George is actually out there. He's going to be in the crowd watching, so he should be cheering his son on. Pretty hardcore. Also, Saturday in the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, we got Thomas Adamick, 43-1, 28 knockouts, fighting Kevin McBride, 31
colossus,
29 knockouts, 1 draw.
I think what Adamick's doing, Rich, and I think this is actually a very good strategy on his part. I mean, not only is he fighting heavyweight, but he is fighting very big heavyweights. Unless an upset happens in July, and David Haye, I think he's fighting Vladimir Klitschko. And the fight, Haye can definitely win. He's got the power to do it. But you look at it, it's like most likely you got to lean towards Klitschko. He's a bigger man. He's a bigger puncher overall. Okay, so say Klitschko wins that fight. Then you've still got the two brothers, the two, twin towers out there, Vladimir and Vivaly, and Adamack's going to have to fight one of them. And I think he actually signed to fight in September, I think, against Vivaly. So what he's doing is he is fighting very big heavyweights. I mean, he started off his heavyweight, career fighting, I think it was like Monty Barrett. Was that Hay? I don't remember. But he had his first heavyweight fight.
Then he went on and he fought a guy like Andrew Galata. Andrew Galata, basket case, but the other thing is he's still a talented fighter when he's got his head screwed on right. And he's a big fighter, 245 pounds. Adamac knocks him out. Then he steps up and he fights a guy like Michael Grant. 6'7", 255 pounds or whatever he is. A guy physically built like the Klitschko brothers. And he beats him.
Yeah.
Now he's fighting a guy like Kevin McBride. I think McBride is 6'6" and like 270-something. Another big physical guy. Now, obviously, he doesn't have the overall talent or skill level that the Klitschko's do. But, he does have at least that size. I mean, it's almost like Adamac is, taking fights to work out. It's almost like he's, taking these fights as they're, paid. I mean, and I'm not saying this in a negative light, but, almost training fights.
Okay. Well, moving on to the big main event of the weekend here from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. It's going to be on HBO pay-per-view. Of course, we have Marcos Rene Maidana, 29-2, 27 knockouts, fighting Eric Morales, 51-6, with 35 knockouts, and it's for the interim WBA World Light Welterweight title. And Eric's been out of the game for a while. He's maybe reinvigorated, maybe not, but Maidana's a pretty intense fighter, only two of his wins not coming by knockout. Never been knocked out himself, so it's definitely going to be a good show. I'm more excited for the co-main event.
And remember, Maidana had Amir Khan all but out on his feet in that fight back in December.
This is a hell of a card. I mean, there's so many good fights. We also have Guerrero, who's 28-1, 18 knockouts, fighting Michael Kutskidis, who's 27-3 with 22 knockouts. That's for the interim WBA World Lightweight title and the interim WBO Lightweight title. We have now 20-0 Danny Garcia, that has got 14 knockouts, fighting Nate Campbell, who's 33-7 with 25 knockouts. One draw. That's going to be a really
good one. He's stepping up in weight now. I mean, Nate's obviously, past his prime. He's not. Fight a few years ago against Timothy Bradley, another one of Bradley's infamous headbutt fights. But you could tell he just did not look good. He was a little bit choppy. But Nate's a wily veteran, and he's got good punching power. So that's a fight. Sometimes he does dumb shit in that ring. But that's a nice little step up for Danny Garcia to put a nice name on his resume there.
Yeah, we'll see. That's a 10-rounder, too, so should be interesting. Another 10-rounder between Paulie Malignaggi, 28-4, with 6 knockouts, fighting Jose Miguel Cotto, 32-2, with 1 draw.
What do you, Malignaggi, think he is here? If he can't beat Miguel Cotto, who pretty much kicked the living crap out of him about 5 or 6 years ago, he'll fight the brother.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't have that issue with the hair again, he'll be all right, I think.
I would swear there is no way you could ever do that again. He can't.
Another fight.
I've done a lot of dumb shit in my life. I usually learn, I did dumb shit like that, not to do it again.
Another good fight between James Kirkland, an 8-round light middleweight fight. James Kirkland is 27-0 with 24 knockouts, fighting Nobuhiro Ishida, 22-6 with 7 knockouts, 2 draws. And that
one, now that he's out, back out of prison after that interruption he had in his career, he's come back, got a couple quick wins. He looked pretty impressive. Once again, another step up, a fight that he should win and should win aggressively. Get his nation back in the
middleweight mix. Yeah, he was in jail at first when he was 19. He was living in Austin, Texas at the time. And he said he was convicted of armed robbery because he needed to get money to help feed his family. And he was 11-0 with 9 KOs already. And he went to jail in 2003 and spent 2.5 years behind bars. Then he resumed his career after being paroled. He got 14 more wins, all but one by knockout. And then in early 2009, he got robbed of about $2,000, $1,800, by a masked gunman. So what did he do? He figures, I need a gun. So he went out and bought himself a .40 caliber Glock. And the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives were tipped off. And a week or so later, he got put back in jail. And so he ended up spending another stint in jail, got out, and resumed his career again. And he went through all the rehab, and seems like he's in a better place now.
And, only time will tell, you know.
Yeah. He definitely has an impressive record either way for spending time in jail. So he's got an interesting backstory, that's for sure. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Rayco Saunders. Rayco War Saunders. But he didn't have as good a record as Saunders did. We got to go down to Australia for a fight next Wednesday to wrap up the boxing schedule here. Actually, Anthony Mundine. Fighting. Mundine is 40-4, 24 knockouts, fighting Garth Wood, who's 10-1-1 with 6 knockouts. So I think this is a setup. But yeah, it's funny to see him still fighting. Down there in Australia. That's next Wednesday. We also have a fight next Wednesday in Brooklyn, New York. There, that's worth mentioning. A couple fights. Luis Collazo is back at welterweight. He's 30-4 with 15 knockouts, fighting Franklin Gonzalez, who's 13-8 with 9 knockouts. Also on that card, we have an 8-round welterweight fight between Dimitri Salita, 32-1-1, 17 knockouts, and Ronnie Warrior Jr., 13-4-1, 4 knockouts. So that's your boxing week. We also have a Strikeforce card coming up in MMA this weekend that I want to quickly go over. We got, of course, the main event that we talked to our guest a little bit about at the end of the call. Nick Diaz and Paul Semtex Daly. This is one of the best match fights I've seen put on by Strikeforce in a long time. One guy's 27, Diaz, and the other guy's 28, Daly. Diaz's record is 24-7-1, and Daly is 27-9-2. They're both pretty comparable in height. Diaz is about 2 inches taller. It should be an interesting fight. They both have very aggressive styles, very bad boy type personalities. Daly was thrown out of the UFC for some of his post fight antics. He was after a round or after the fight, he went over and just hauled off and punched Josh Koscheck, if I remember correctly. And Diaz, I remember seeing him after a loss, giving the double middle fingers to the camera who followed him backstage.
Actually, I could see myself doing that sometimes, too.
But he has quite an interesting boxing style. He throws very looping punches from the outside. And it's interesting to watch. And I think Daly is more of a striker-based fighter, too, so this should be a very intense meet. Also on the undercard, we got Gilbert El Nino Melendez, who's 19-2, fighting Tatsuya Crusher Kawajiri, who's 27-6-2. Melendez is a pretty interesting fighter. I don't know too much about Kawajiri. He's got got a pretty decent record, so that should be a good fight. And we got Gegard Mousasi, who's 30 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw is his record. He's 25, fighting 35-year-old Keith Jardine, 17-9-1. And he fights at the Jackson camp there with John Bones Jones. And he's been quoted here and there about that whole situation between Rashad Evans and Jones having a fight now, even though they were training partners. But Jardine hasn't really been competing at high levels of the sport lately, so it's interesting to see him in the main events or in the mix for the main 3 fights on any card, never mind a Strikeforce card. But we'll see. Maybe he's reinvigorated, like Morales might be. But rounding off the card, we have Shinya Aoki versus Lyle Beerbohm. Aoki's 26-5 with 1 draw. Beerbohm is 16-1. And Aoki's 27, Beerbohm's 32. That's at 155. And it's first preliminary fight starts at 4:30 p.m. It's going to be live on Showtime at 10 p.m. I think this fight's going to be interesting because even though they had last Friday's Challengers card, I think this is the very first main event on Strikeforce that they've had since the merger with the UFC. And I have noticed a lot of stuff on the UFC website that is now promoting Strikeforce. So it's going to be interesting to just check it out and see how the UFC, if at all, gets promoted on the Strikeforce card now, or how they mix them together. It seems like Dana White, when he was interviewed about it, seemed to like the idea that they're going to keep them as 2 separate entities and business as usual was its big catchphrase. But I think eventually it's going to end up being a lot more cooperative than they made it sound to begin with. But we'll see. Maybe Showtime still has some animosity against the UFC and they won't allow it because they do all the production for Strikeforce. But I would think money talks, and since the UFC put money in to keep Strikeforce going, that if they want to do promotion on Strikeforce card, they'll be able to do it. But that's definitely something we should keep an eye on. Also, we have a pretty big wrestling story this week that I wanted to get a mention of. The WWE is no longer going to be the World Wrestling Entertainment. It's now just WWE. And this is part of Vince McMahon's rebranding of the organization.
Yeah, what is it like, Global Entertainment or something?
No, it's WWE. It's just, there's no meaning behind the initials now, according to a new strategy. It's just WWE.
That's wonderful.
So they banned the word wrestling, basically. They don't like any fighters to even mention wrestling.
That is quite possibly the dumbest thing ever. I can see part of the reasoning behind it. You know, wrestling sometimes does get, portrayed in a negative light. I mean, the one thing that was totally funny, I forget who said it, because for years, when wrestling was portrayed as a real sport, everybody always said, what about it? It's fake. It's fake. Then when they turned around and said, you know what? It's entertainment. It's sports entertainment. You know, the matches are scripted, yes, but, there is a level of athleticism in there. It's sports entertainment. What everybody say? It's too violent. So when it was real, it was fake. When they admitted it was fake, it was too violent. Wrestling does get hit with some bad stereotypes, and especially over the last 10 or so years, you have the Owen Hart death in 99, and you had a lot of, wrestlers dying young, steroid abuse, heart attacks, things like that, overdosing on drugs. And then the worst of the worst was the Chris Benoit thing 4 years ago when he murdered his wife and son and hung himself. Okay, yeah, and everybody's always associating that with wrestling. So no, but I mean,
But now, I mean, look at football players now. You have a lot of retired football players that, you know, due to the damage, you know, suffering concussions and all, have, you know, committed suicide or, you know, done crazy things and gotten jailed or whatever. So it's, I don't think it should be all wrestling, but I guess they're just trying to distance themselves and trying to market themselves more as, you know, not what it was 30, 40 years ago, which is a very, you know, low-class type of entertainment. They're trying to, I guess, pick it up. I mean, with the WrestleMania this week, and I didn't watch it, but getting Snooki involved, I'm sure that just, you know, brought up the intelligence level 500 degrees because she's just so bright. Hey, whatever floats your boat, but I'll tell you right now, I loved wrestling when I was a kid, growing up with Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Rowdy Roddy Piper, King Kong Bundy, all those guys, loved it. And then, like I said, and maybe because I was turning into a teenager or whatever, but it had gotten, you know, pretty lame. You know, Hogan was pretty much all, you know, faded, and he wasn't as exciting as he used to be, and, you know, it wasn't connecting anymore. And then they turned it around in the mid-90s, and it's, boy, it got hot again with guys like The Rock and Stone Cold and Mankind and Undertaker. And now, I mean, I watch it on Monday nights. More out of the reason was it's more of like just a habit. I haven't watched a pay-per-view in, I'll say, about 7 years. I haven't been to a live event in, I'll say, about 7 years. And I honestly think, I remember I'd be going away for a weekend. I would DVR it. I don't DVR anymore. You know, it's like, yeah, I miss it. You know, I don't care. It's just, you know, it's not as, you know, edgy as it used to be. It's not as gripping as it used to be.
Right. Well, yeah, it's interesting to read about this. There's a whole article about their strategy moving forward, too. They're going to move to doing more production, live entertainment, and branding. And they produced the numbers here as far as how they've been doing. And it's a public company now, too, so that sort of adds an interesting twist to this. They made $53.5 million in 2010 on revenue of $477.7 million. There's my 47 again. And it has a cash flow of $94 million. And there's very little debt on its books, with about $69.8 million in cash on hand. And so basically McMahon said that anything that's out there, we can take on a ton of debt. So I don't know whether that means it's good to invest in the WWE now or bad. It all depends, I guess, on whether when they take that debt on that it pays off. But we'll see. They also have been getting involved in movie production. Even though a lot of the movies have starred wrestlers and gone straight to DVD, they're going to invest in that. So we'll see. Also, I heard
been complete bombs. And I think the worst of the worst was their first, and that was No Holds Barred. That's still one of the all-time great stinkers out there.
And the move to do all this comes as they're rebounding from a tough end to last year that saw attendance and pay-per-view revenue drop 15% in the fourth quarter.
Because their show sucks.
And also because I guess they've been raising prices. Also, just to finish up with this piece here in the show, just wanted to mention that there are a lot of guys phasing out their ring activity, including Shawn Michaels, Dave Bautista, Chris Jericho, Mark The Undertaker Calloway, and Paul Triple H Levesque. But the WWE recently got former star Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, to come back next year to take on John Cena. I don't know if that's going
to
be happening.
Yeah, I'm going to wait a whole year to watch it. Yeah. I see that being more of a failure than anything.
Yeah. But, you know, WWE's trying. We'll see what they do. Until next.
Vince made a lot of money. I got to give him credit on that. And on that note, the tornado is out.
Yeah,
until next week.
See you next week, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
Later.
Good night.